Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Psychovertical Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. It's a very windy day here in Galway, sunny Galway. The sun's actually shining. That's amazing. So this podcast is it's quite good actually. It's a conversation with Hazel Finlay, the famous Hazel Finlay. Now, before I play that conversation, it is a conversation. I'm not interviewing Hazel. And the main reason for calling Hazel up was I wanted to discuss the idea that is climbing selfish? Because it's kind of an interesting thing to talk about. Now, the problem is Hazel is... one thing I really like about Hazel is not that she's a good climber. She's also... I would say she's not someone who's easy to pin down. Like, she kind of makes her own... way in the world, and she has her own thoughts and all this kind of stuff, and that's going to make people be like, oh my god, I've got my own thoughts. But you know, she's a really good person to have a conversation with, because you can sort of throw some sort of crazy things at her, and she won't just get stop the call or whatever. So it's a very broad conversation. We took everything from some climbing related stuff about mental illness, about Donald Trump and Barack Obama, all sorts of stuff. And there are things in here which will upset some people and offend some people, and some people will may never listen to this podcast ever again. But you know, I feel like this podcast has really good listeners. You know, like, I'm very selective of who listens to this podcast. So, you know, if you don't like this conversation with I'm not your average stupid person, you know. I'm but anyway, but Hazel is like a super smart person, and I feel if you can have a conversation like this with someone else, and at the end of it, you know, it's kind of it leaves you with things to think about, then I feel like it's good. It's not just like both me and Hazel have spent a lot of time talking to people over the last 2 months, and a lot of the conversations are kind of, you could phone them in, really. Like, they don't really mean anything. But I think this conversation's good, and there's so many things in this conversation. Like, you could go off on, you could probably do like 20 podcasts, you know, just going off and exploring some of the things we talk about. But we just, you know, we're in different places, and it's hard to, you know, really dig into it. So I hope none of the things we talk about upset anybody, and if they do, it's, you know, that's just the way, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's quite good to be upset by people, and I don't think she says anything, there's nothing she says that they'll get her into trouble. So that's the main thing. You just say she had some bad experience with the NHS. That's probably, you know, that's probably quite, you know, you might have some impact on her, but you know, what the hair. So anyway, so I hope you enjoy this podcast, and any, you know, I'm happy to hear any feedback, and And the next week's podcast, we reference in here a tweet about me talking about mental health, and that will probably be the next podcast. I'm a week late from Mental Health Week, but I wanted to do a podcast probably based on, maybe it was podcast number two or podcast number three, like a follow-up on sort of mental health and mental resilience and things. So I feel like, you know, people are a little bit worn a bit thin at the moment. So, you know, if I'm going to sort of have a little talk about that, my ideas about that kind of thing. So anyway, so I really hope you enjoy this podcast. And if you find things in it which are interesting, then please share it to other people. And if you want to unfollow this podcast, then, you know, that's fine. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah, so we'll start the podcast.
And,
okay. So the podcast is starting. So today I'm talking to Hazel Finlay, who is like everybody else, she's like trapped in a room somewhere. She's in a little cell there. I've got glass walls in my cell, so I've got
quite big windows.
Oh, very nice. Is that your house?
Yeah.
I thought you should be living in like a VW van.
I changed about a year ago, bought a house, and now I'm like a real person now. Don't live in a Spanish van.
Do you own like a husky? Do you walk around in your underwear with a husky getting photographs of you like looking into the distance, showing your ass? That's the way to make a lot of money these days.
Yeah, I know. I'm missing out, actually. I mean, I think I could make more money if I did something like that.
Have you ever listened to the lyrics of Anaconda by Nicki Minaj?
No. Is it a rap song?
Yeah, but it's really good. It's really good to look, read the lyric, see how much money it made, and then consider whether it's worth being successful. Like, if trying to do something really good is the way to be successful, or it's just something, it's a different kind of game, maybe.
I don't know how well, like, tuned into that I am. Maybe we're talking about that guy, that first like amazing YouTuber guy. What's he called? Like PewDiePie or something.
Oh yeah, PewDiePie. Yeah.
It's just like, you know, what was it about him that made him so successful? Because I don't really get it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've not listened to watched his videos. I mean, that would probably be a start. But he's not like saying anything that good, and he's not especially funny. And
no, it's weird, isn't it?
Quite weird, yeah. But people love him. They're like protesting for him to be saved and stuff. I don't know.
But then, like, it's like cult. At least if you were in a cult, like a good one, at least like the Maharishi, whoever it is, the guy who's telling you stuff, you know, it's like stuff you could have on a fridge. Like, they say things that are kind of cool, aren't they? You know, like L. Ron Hubbard, if you ever see him speaking, you know, the Scientology stuff, he's like really, it's like amazing. He's a terrifying person, but it's amazing the way he speaks. You can really imagine how
he... Were you like wanting to sign up?
I think it's in some people. Some people are always joining some cult or other, aren't they? They just, it's in your nature. I think it's maybe a working class thing, maybe.
You think? No, because Scientology is a rich people person thing, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no, Scientology, well, you haven't got enough money. They're not interested in poor people.
True, yeah.
You know, like poor people are not where the money's at. That's why, you know, like in 1984, have you read 1984?
Yeah.
But that's the interesting bit, is that all the poor people, all the proles, they're left their own devices. They don't care about them. So all the party members are all like the middle class kind of people. So it's like when you're trying to have a debate about politics with someone, and they're just, you know, if you go and get your window mended in your car, and you're like, you're talking to the glass fitter, and you're like, oh, you know, Jordan Peterson, you know, see what he's talking about at the moment. He's like, don't know what you're talking about, mate.
But they don't
fill their heads with all this, you know, all this stuff that other people do. So it's so maybe cults are, you know, maybe like Christianity or Islam is for poor people. That's their.
But Catholicism is kind of like it. It's all about wealth, isn't it? Or that, you know, it's a wealthy establishment, but that's a lot of because the thing is, although poor people can't give much, there's loads of them. So if they all give a quid, that can that can go to quite a big...
Like Red Nose Day for God.
Cathedral, you know?
It's funny because in this house, I'm living with two like real staunch Catholics. Because I mean, I'm in Ireland here. So a lot of people are Catholic. And people always say, I'm like, oh, I don't believe in God, but I believe in something. You're like, well, that just means you believe in God, but you don't want to tell, you feel a bit embarrassed to say it. But here, people really, they really believe it. It's really interesting. You know, people say, I don't believe in God, but I believe in something. I'm a spiritual person. So it makes you feel like you're the odd one out here. Where in England, you don't, like if someone says, if you have like a meal and, you know, everyone's, you know, you're all sat around the table and one person's a Christian, it's like, oh, I need to pray before I eat. Everyone's like, oh my God, what a crazy person this is. If you're in a meal where everyone else is about to pray, you know, in America, you know, like people start praying and you're like, shit, I'm not praying. I'm going to pretend to pray or something.
Well, so are you praying then, are you now?
No. But I do think it's probably quite good to pretend to believe in something. Just go through the motions. Like I've been to Mass quite a few times and I took my kids to Mass and they were literally like laying on the floor because it was so packed. Like you couldn't sit down. All these Polish people pray probably. But they were so packed that they couldn't sit down. So they were like sitting on the floor to begin with. Then they were like laying on the floor like going, oh, this is so boring. And I was just like, I was thinking like, have some respect, you know, like if you're in a mosque or, you know, you wouldn't be like that. You know, you'd plan.
There's
that weird kind of cynical thing.
Yeah, it is really weird that, isn't it? Like how white Westerners or Westerners in general, how they can be so disdainful towards Christianity or...
if you're a Buddhist, you're
Catholicism.
In there.
But yeah, if you're a Buddhist or a Muslim or a more exotic religion, then all of a sudden we have to be really respectful.
Yeah.
It is weird that, isn't it?
Yeah, like
I find myself doing that, you know, like I mock Christianity, but...
It's in your default, I think it's your default settings though, isn't it? You have to, you shouldn't really mess, you know, it's always like don't touch your default settings because that's, you know, what you might become a Christian. Do you know when you see like really, you read like really, really intelligent people and then they're Christians. You're like, what? How can that, how can that be? And I think I'm kind of halfway there to understanding it. I think having lived in like an Islamic country and having lived in a Catholic country, and then having lived in a country where everyone's an atheist, I think we're like maybe more bigoted in England. We don't realize it, but the way we look at other people, it's like, oh, that, you know, well, you can have your religion because you're obviously less, you're a foreigner. You're not as sophisticated as we are, but you're English. You should know better not to believe in fairies or whatever. I think it's really fascinating. It's like a manifestation of how insane we are, religion. The same with like technology, maybe like sending a rocket sending a rocket with a car in it into space. You know, that's an amazing thing, but it's also like a crazy thing. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Got some utility to it, I guess.
I feel like we've covered a lot of topics in the first 5 minutes.
I just had a meeting then, like a business meeting with someone about doing coaching, some coaching kind of thing. I wasn't really listening to what he's talking about, but we just end up going on these like mad tangents. I was telling him about, I was telling him about this idea of having, you know, geotagging, where you go around like Germany. So you have that, but it's to do with sex. And you have to tag where you have sex, but you have to have sex where there's a folly. And it's called like folly fucking. It's like follyfucking.com or something. This is my idea to make millions of pounds. And I'm telling this man on the Zoom about my folly fucking idea. And he's this really serious guy. And I stopped. I was like, when I finished, I was like, my God, what's wrong with you? Like, this guy might give you some money or employ you. And you just
not talking. Anymore. You just ruined it.
You just always, just always blow everything by having no filter.
do you think that when you're in a situation where you're not, where you should have a filter, that's when you've got less of a filter? It's like this weird reverse thing.
So
Like, if you're on stage in front of loads of children, are you more likely to mess up and say something rude than if you are actually just with your mates?
Yeah, yeah. I guess you've got nothing to say. The people closest to you, you don't really speak to them, do you? you just fill the life full of chat. Like, oh, that's why it's good to like read the same book, because you've got something to talk about, or watch the same television program. Otherwise, you just like, you don't know what to talk about. You're like, oh, should we have a baby? You know, that's it. It's like, should we have a baby? No, I don't know. Let's have a baby. You talk about having a baby for like 10 years, and then you have a baby, and then you talk about the baby for like till they leave home.
Is this personal experience?
It probably is. Like, you know, you need something. What can we talk about? Like Game of Thrones. I've seen it though. Like, you know, arguing about watching Netflix. You know, like, if you actually, you know, you can get like an app where it looks at how many. Where your fingers are on your computer screen, on your computer keyboard. So you know, if you press like the T a lot, you're like, it's highlighted. So you can tell what you press a lot on your computer. You should do something about conversations, like how much of the conversation is actually useful.
Just like fill in the silence.
Yeah. Like I've noticed in this house, it's always like, oh, do you want the heating on? You know, it's a bit hot. Should I turn the heating off? And I'm like,
what are you having for dinner?
From now on, don't ever talk to me about the heating. Fucking turn it on or turn it off. I don't care. Like, you've never asked me. I've never felt cold and I've never felt hot. So it's either not working. So it's just like one of these things where it's like, don't know what to do. I'll just ask this question. Like, oh, the weather's nice. Or where's the cat? Or, you know, Finnish people aren't like that. I don't know if you've been to Finland.
They don't really stay quiet.
Yeah, they're just kind of really, really... Because they always say, like, Europeans always ask a question with the answer in it. Like, oh, do you think we're going to miss the bus?
That's a statement, really, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're always like, why are you... it's kind of weird. What was our point? Yeah, so but maybe that's a good thing. When you go climbing, you don't really do much talking. Do you? If you're on a long trip.
Yeah, I don't know. There's things you can do in a climbing day to escape conversation, isn't there? Like, I like hanging out with... Do you ever find that, you know, it's quite tiring sometimes to, like, meet up to see your mates when all you'll do is chat?
Yeah.
Whereas it's nice to spend the whole day together where there's, like, some chatting and then there's, like, other things going on as well?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a bit like an interview. It's like a bit like being on a podcast or something, isn't it? It's like...
Oh yeah,
asking each other questions about what they've been climbing. Up to.
What was the first boots you had? What's the longest rope you've ever used? It's like, oh Christ Almighty! Yeah, because maybe doing like on a YouTube video, you can't monetize it unless it's over 10 minutes long. So people might take something that's actually only 1 minute of speaking, but they'll stretch it over 10 minutes to try and get some 20p out of it.
Is that what you're doing right now? You're counting down the minutes. You're like, yes, that's another quid.
That'd be like 0.0000001 pence. But like, I think it's the same in books. Often you've got like one idea that you could probably get into a tweet probably, but you have to expand it over like 100,000 words.
Well, every non-fiction book I've ever read, I think it could have been cut in half.
Yeah,
I barely finish books because I'm like, oh yeah, I sort of get the point now. Do you know what I mean? But then they keep expanding and keep expanding, and it's often not any deeper. It's just like another example of the point you've already made, and like, I get the idea now. Like, you could have wrapped this up.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of those things, nonfiction stuff, could just be long essays, really, like micro books.
Maybe like a dissertation where the publisher has asked for this many words. Because a lot of ideas are really like, so yesterday I did this tweet and it was like, are we suffering from an epidemic of mental weakness, not mental illness?
I saw that. I didn't bother to read the comments though, because I thought that people would go off on one. Yeah, I read them now.
And it's also like, if this makes you angry, then why? And then loads of people get really angry. And
but you are a bit like that, aren't you? You like to rile people up.
But it's not like, if I was a therapist now, I'd say to you, but it's not, you can't make people rile up. You know, you choose how you feel about something, not anyway. That's
the Buddhist way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or the Stoic way.
But it's in, you know, this idea you should never attack the person, you know, you should always attack the idea. And people often get put themselves in between the idea and the, you know, so it's a kind of a weird, and it, even in the question, you're telling someone in the question, you're asking, why are you feeling angry at this question? And, but you could take that one tweet and you could write a whole book about it. I could write about my kids and my own childhood and blah, blah, blah. And you could spin it all out into 100,000 words. But does it need to be longer than 20 words?
I think it's all to do with the publishers, isn't it? Because they don't feel like they can charge a tenner for a book that's not that long, and they want to charge a tenner instead of a fiver, maybe something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because most climbing books is like, we went on our holidays, we got to the top, and then we came down, and that was it, really. Maybe someone died. But... You know, like if you read like Lynn Hill's book, it's like I went climbing in every chapter of this book, and that's it. That's the end.
Apart from when I didn't tie my knot and I fell off.
Oh yeah, that's the best bit. But yeah, you know, because I'm writing this book at the moment.
That's why I don't read climbing books.
Yeah, it's quite hard. It's like Andy Cave's book. We've read that, Learning to Breathe. It's all the stuff about being a miner is really interesting. And all the climbing stuff, it's like, it's just a bit boring after a while.
It's almost like climbing books are actually more interesting to non-climbers. Like my brother, he doesn't really climb. He climbed a bit as a kid, but then he stopped climbing. And he's so better versed than I am on climbing history and climbing books. And you know, he's read your books and he's read like all of the like climbing great biographies and stuff. And he loves them.
Yeah,
but I'm not interested in them at all because I go climbing all the time. Like I don't need to read about climbing as well.
Yeah, maybe it's like someone who's like a historian of like music, and then someone's just a great musician. You don't really need to know it, do you? Really, all that stuff.
No.
But you probably know a lot of stuff that's not in books as well, like history.
No, I don't. I'm so bad at climbing history.
But you know, like little stories about John Redhead or Johnny Dawes or.
Yeah, some stuff like that. Yeah. Personal stuff. I'll remember it if like someone told me a story.
Yeah.
But I don't know it because I read a guidebook or because I read someone's biography or something.
Did you read that thing that Grimer wrote the other day about driving somewhere with Johnny Dawes and Andy Pop, and they lost control of the car, and Johnny Dawes was the passenger, and he reached over and he did the handbrake and he's like stopped the car. He did this like amazing maneuver, but he was the passenger of the car.
Whoa, that does ring a bell in my mind. Actually, I don't know if Johnny will have told me that story or not.
But it's like one of those stories which no one would ever write that in a book, but it's like a really good little...
Yeah.
It really tells you a lot about Johnny Dawes.
Yeah.
And the way he's like really cool about it, and Andy Pop didn't even realise that he'd done it. So it's... But no one ever writes those down, those kind of things, do they?
No. They're more interested than the climbing stuff.
What were the holes like?
Yeah. Some people like that though. To be fair, like some people do get into that stuff. I'm not that person, but lots of people are into it.
I know someone went to like a Ricky Bell slideshow, and he was literally like talking about every move on all these routes, and like, you know, the real climbers like really really loved it because it was like, oh, how do you, you know, how can, you know, I guess you're always like trying to find, they're going to tell you something you could use, you know, like I always like cross my little finger and my index finger together, and I'm on a flat hold, and it increases my power. And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to have to try that next time. You just make it all up, you know. Like if Dave McLeod starts telling you, you should always stick your chin out when you're climbing by like, stick it out further than normal, you'll climb a lot harder. Everyone start going out like climbing with the chin sticking out. But
I just hit my face against the wall.
I think Simon Panton maybe told me that story. He was climbing in Fontainebleau, and he couldn't do this boulder problem. And this old guy came out of the woods and was like, you need to stick your chin out or something. And he did. And then he managed to do this boulder problem. So it's always made me think, you know, maybe it was like like Dumbo with his feather in his trunk. You know what I mean? You get that reference?
No, not really.
Okay. You can't fly with a feather.
I remember, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't need it.
So is it just like in Peter Pan when they think happy thoughts? Is that it?
I guess so. I've not read Peter Pan. I've never not read Dumbo either. But
yeah, I've only seen the Disney films of both. Yeah.
There was someone the other day, like it was an interview with someone, and he just had no references. So he was like saying, like, everything was like, oh, do you know, I once saw this thing on a fridge, this quote on a fridge, or then he was like, I once saw this bumper sticker. Like all these references were these like references from films or bumper stickers or fridges. And it made me think like, oh, that's kind of embarrassing. You should just pretend like, oh yeah, as the Dalai Lama once said, it is better to be a pancake than a pizza or something, you know, like, but you never want to just, I think it's really amazing when people are really truthful and they say, you ask them something and they go, I don't know what that is. What is that? You know, you say a word and they'll say, you know, I don't know what that means. Like most people don't. They go like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like Vanessa's been going around saying, forlocked all the time. And I'm like, no, it's fair lord.
Oh, right.
She's like, why has no one told me it's fair lord? I'm like, I don't know. They probably just think you're stupid.
Or they think that she's really smart and that they don't know what the word is.
Oh yeah, maybe. Or macho. Yeah. Oh, you saw macho.
What's macho?
Macho.
Oh, right.
Oh, like, I thought rogue was regu for a long time.
You thought what was what?
Rogue was regu. Just quit.
Anyway. That's a proper dyslexic thing, isn't it?
I think, yeah.
But there's some words. Have you noticed that there's some words that you don't ever say in conversation, but you know them just because you've read them?
Oh, yeah.
Or there's some words as well that you never ever spell.
Or someone's never name.
Write them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're just like, oh, whoa, I've never written that word before. That's weird.
And it's funny. I once met Jim Danini, and he was like, you know, a famous Patagonian climber. Mm. And it was weird because I was in the Peak District working outside, and suddenly, like, Jim Danini, who's this, like, god of climbing, like, walks into the shop, you know, this American famous climber. Mm. He kind of walks into the shop and, like, oh, my God, it's Jim. And then I didn't know how to pronounce his name. Like, I knew I could read it. But never said it. I was like, Jim did the you know. Anyway, I probably thought I was an idiot. So
we should, in front of him.
Yeah. So we should carry up. We should start with the subject of this podcast.
All right. Yeah.
Which is the idea of selfishness. Cause only because I saw you wrote a thing on Instagram about is climbing selfish. Did you get any responses?
Oh yeah, I got loads of responses. Actually, it was like one of my most trafficked posts. All most right. people were in uproar that it could have even been suggested that it was selfish.
Selfish people like that.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. But you're an expert in this, aren't you, Andy?
I am, yeah. I have a lifetime of wreckage.
In your wake.
But I was thinking when before we get into the question, would you say you're the product of selfishness? Like, would you say your parents were selfish?
My dad was.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mum wasn't at all. She's like the most giving person in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's not a climber. That's the thing. That's why she wasn't selfish.
Yeah.
Her passion was her work. She's a head teacher, and that's what she, which is all about giving and helping others.
Yeah.
Whereas if your passion's climbing, it's not really. Maybe if you teach or something. But,
yeah.
But no, I don't think climbing's selfish. But yeah, just like I said in the post, right, it's your mindset around it, isn't it? It's do you let your passion affect other people negatively?
Yeah.
Like, if you, like, abandon people or rude to people, or you're just not fun to be around because you're just talking about your project and you can't talk about anything else, then that's a bit selfish, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
I guess it takes like two people, doesn't it, really? Someone has to allow it to happen. Someone has to be the martyr. And I think there's actually a need in people to be, like, it's a terrible thing to say. I'll get into trouble for saying it. But some people want to be kind of abused in some way. Mm-hmm. It's like it's much easier to be abused.
Oh.
Than it is to be. No, I don't mean in, you know, you can turn that how you want it, but it's much easier to be abused than to abuse someone else.
Is it because it's more passive? It's passive, yeah. I don't know whether it's easy is the right word though, because there might be a lot more suffering. So
But suffering's not. But suffering is something. I think, like, if you look at all religions, there's a lot of it in there about suffering. You know, there's a lot of, like, we seem to have a desire to be sinners and to be punished and things. I don't know why that is, but maybe it's some form of growth or something. But
Nietzsche had a lot to say about this, didn't he?
Nietzsche.
In what's that one, Superman, that book?
Yeah.
Just that the meek will inherit the earth, isn't it? It's all about that, isn't it? About how actually the victims are the rulers, right? But yeah, I don't know.
I definitely met or know people in my life who have just constantly been abused by people. But sometimes you were just like, why do you let them do this? Why do you let this go on? And it's a really, but they're almost like a religious figure in that they're so pure.
Because they're a pure victim.
They're the pure victim, and everyone in their life, like, is horrible to them. But they kind of invite it. It's a very important question thing to talk about. But it's one of these questions no one's going to talk about. But you know, there's even been studies where people have asked, like, why did you do this to this person? And they're just on some kind of animal level, people like, oh well, that person, they were. You know, the classic thing is that they were asking for it, which is, you know, it's a dangerous thing to say. But you know, it's like, why do people, you know, you have people in your lives who just not have nonstop bad luck and terrible things happen to them. And they often make a lot of really, really bad choices, like again and again and again and again. That's like kind of one aspect. But the people who are abused by people who are selfish, like look after my kids or work, you know, 18 hour days, or, you know, people prey on those people. But I think they get something out of it in return. I don't know what it.
Do you think it's just like, it's almost like two different types of ego that kind of like, it's sort of like a symbiosis, because it's like that idea that like lots of very insecure people become bullies, don't they? Right. It's like, they hurt other people to bolster their own egos.
Yeah.
But then I wonder if like the opposite of that is like allowing yourself to be a victim in some ways bolsters an ego of a different sort, like a victim's ego or something.
Yeah.
Think people are just victims by just like straight up bad luck as well, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, like lots of people are just very unlucky in life. So I think there's some people who could be seen as victims, but they're not inviting it. They really hate it. They wish they weren't victims.
But I think the people who like luck has dealt them a bad hand, they generally don't portray themselves as victims either.
Yeah, they don't feel like victims. They don't act like victims. Yeah, they're just like, oh, that's so fucking unlucky. I'm going to try and do something about it. But
where other people look on and like, I wish I was disabled. You know, like, I wish I. You know, but there's some really weird stuff that, now I think that's, you know, like on this mental health thing, I sort of showed this thing. Is it Rose, the woman who plays like Batman in the latest Batman thing? If you look at her like bio on Wiki.
The woman that plays Batman, isn't that Batwoman?
Oh, Batwoman. If you look at her like her bio on Wikipedia, you know, the first thing about her life, it's all about, you know, being abused, being bullied, being, you know, like all these things that you could probably take anyone's childhood and make it sound horrific. You know, like I've got
the start of your talk is like that, isn't it? It's like, look where I lived. It was terrible. I was so poor in Bolton.
Yeah, hold
on. The same.
but I think the thing is with all those talks is to then subvert it and say like, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, this was being grown up like this. This was the greatest gift ever. And people are like, you're not supposed to say that. It's supposed to be like a Charles Dickens kind of, you know, thing.
Yeah.
So you looked at this woman's biography, and basically she's like saying, I'm a wounded, abused, $200 million person in the bank, successful actress, you know, where I think a lot of people don't have that. And so I think that a lot of young people don't feel like you're anything unless you're nothing, unless you've got some massive trauma. Like if you're in a soap opera, you have to be the character who's like, oh, like feeling sorry for this person, you know, like.
We love the underdog, don't we?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And that's maybe why some people like to be victims in some way, because you see it in climbing a bit, don't you? It's like, now, people like to be the underdog, don't they? They like to be the one that people don't expect to be good. Like, I noticed that in my own climbing, right? Like, before I was a professional climber and people knew who I was and stuff, like, there was so much... I did enjoy, like, my ego enjoyed that whole, like, oh, that random blonde girl walks up and no one expects her to be good. And then I am good, you know, and you feel like a bit special. Now everyone expects me to be better than I am, you know?
You're like a superhero.
And I sort of, like, watched my friend Maddie go through a similar thing, because then she was sort of the underdog, you know? She, like, started climbing a bit later and, like, no one expected her to be good. And then now she's really good. And you have to learn, like, to like deal with people's expectations in that way.
Do you know, there's a weird thing about people. I don't know if it's the same with climbing, but like someone like Elon Musk, everyone wants him to fail in a way. They want all his businesses to go bust and they want him to lose everything. It's almost like, ha, see, you know. And you know, when his rocket blows up, you know, half the people says you're right. But in climbing, it's not quite like that, is it?
We don't want Adam Ondra to break his leg, do we?
No, it'd be really... I can't think of anyone you wish them unwell, really, in climbing. You know, not proper climbing.
Yeah, maybe it's because they're... Yeah, why is that?
But do you not think in climbing, you can never be this pathetic... But, you know, you have to be the strongest version of who you are. All that code you have, I'm a pathetic whatever. As soon as you start climbing, you're like... Fuck that. I'm going to have to, you know, like someone wants to commit suicide, take them rock climbing. And they're like, take, I'm coming off. And you're like, I thought you wanted to kill yourself. And like, change your mind.
Have you ever done that in real life?
I have climbed with people where I did kind of worry they might kill themselves.
Oh, God.
And I think that's happened. I think Dennis Gray went climbing with someone and he untied from the rope and he jumped off.
No way.
It does happen. Oh, God. So,
pretty bad if that happened when you're climbing.
Well, I think there is that.
Out and you may commit suicide.
Yeah. I guess, like, well, some forms of climbing, like mountaineering, is a form of suicide anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, like, when you're actually doing it, it's a bit like now, like everyone has this, we're all living in our subjective reality in their houses. And as soon as you go outside and you leave behind Channel 4 News and BBC News, you go out and you go, actually, things aren't that bad outside. You know, I almost can't see what the problem was. You know, like, I thought I was going to commit suicide this morning, and now having gone for a little walk, I'm feeling a lot better.
So you're saying that the news and social media is depressing? And
it's not just depressing. It creates like a mania and psychosis in people. You know, if you get people around a table, you can tell who reads the newspaper and who watches the telly and who doesn't. Like, I've got a relation here, and every time now again they come and they like cover their mouths up when they're coming near the house, and I was like, you know, they were talking about the World Health Organization, and oh, isn't it terrible, Donald Trump and the World Health Organization. And I was like, do you like just look into what's going on with the China and that kind of stuff, and it's nothing to do with Donald Trump. And you know, and maybe like read outside of the news you watch. And said that, but I watch Channel 4 News, ITV News, BBC News. And I was like, exactly, you know. But she's like absolutely terrified, like, you know, beyond the most terror she's ever had in her life. And you see it. You see it less now, I think. I think more people are becoming like accustomed to it, maybe. You know, like the Blitz after a while. Well,
but also, like, we didn't really know what was going to happen at first. We didn't know how bad it was going to be.
But he wanted it to be really
so
bad.
Many unknowns, right?
Yeah.
I guess there's
the unknowns, and then there's the unknown unknowns. Have you ever remember that? There's the known knowns.
Known knowns.
There's the known knowns. And there's the unknown knowns. That's the big thing.
How can a known be unknown?
I guess there's a lot of unknowns that we know, but there's also unknowns we don't know.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
So like if it was created in a laboratory, which it probably was, you know, if someone says 100% it wasn't, that means it probably was, because you can't be 100% sure it wasn't. But if you are, if
or you could just say that they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, if someone said we don't know, then that's valid. But if someone says 100% it didn't happen, it's like, well, yesterday you told me it is, you can catch it and you can catch it multiple times. And then today you're telling me that's not true. And then tomorrow you're going to tell me the opposite. And you've been telling me this for 2 months. I think I'm not really listening to what you're saying now. I've kind of switched off. So. I think it's like hindsight's a terrible thing, isn't it?
Why?
Because everyone's like, oh, we should never have done this and we should never blah, blah, blah.
Regret. Yeah.
But at the same time, maybe it's good to listen more to the people who at the beginning said, having looked at human nature and, you know, institutional cowardice and how these things all kind of work. I don't like to talk about the thing anyway.
The virus thing.
It's a bit boring.
So, you know, your Instagram thing then. So, you know, if someone reads that, then they assume that you don't think the virus is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what people read, right? They read that and they think, he doesn't think the virus is a big deal, therefore he doesn't care about my nan that died.
Yeah. Yeah, like I think people always, what's that thing it's always best to think people are stupid rather than like they've got malice. Like they don't mean to think you're a bad person, but they're stupid.
Just ignorant. That's what the Buddha says as well. Maybe you should start being a Buddhist instead of a Catholic. That's the Buddha says that also, right? That people aren't bad; they're just ignorant.
I guess
compassion for people who are ignorant.
I think also maybe people always think everybody else is less aware than they are. Like I must think the same as well, you know. But I often think that people betray how little they know by how they respond to what you're saying, you know. So if you talk, you know, like, so a good example is like, I don't really like Barack Obama, but that doesn't mean I support Donald Trump, you know. So if I'm critical of like Obama's foreign policy in like Libya and, you know, Iraq and ISIS and all these kind of things, that doesn't mean I support Donald Trump. That means I know more about it than someone who. So as soon as I would say something, you know, like, have you noticed there's a lot less wars going on right now? We haven't got Ukraine. We haven't got all these things. People will immediately think I'm supporting Donald Trump. So they take a conversation that could be, you know, let's talk about, you know, like the role of America in the world and what happens when it withdraws. Like, who fills the void? Do you want China to take over? You know, if you go to Africa, you'll see that the Chinese are like taking over everything. You know, that's a good conversation to have. But if it's just like a Trump derangement syndrome of like, you know, on either side, like, you love Trump, you hate Trump, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
you can't have like a good, conversation with anyone, really.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I probably wouldn't be able to have that conversation with you because I don't know enough about politics and what's happening in the world. But what I would probably say, though, is that if someone's really keen, you know, like, obviously Obama was better than Trump, right? So, like, if you...
In some aspects.
Which president you want to have and you were to pick Trump over Obama, then I would really question your reasoning.
I guess it's hard to have a conversation about the two of them. Is that, like, I in a way I think that Obama, Bush, all those people are all exactly the same. Like, there's no difference between any of them. It's just the continuation of the status quo and that kind of stuff. And I'd like to think Trump is some kind of speed bump. You know, like Trump, like the problem with Trump is, he has no, there's no filter between his inner self and his outer self. Where when you hear like a politician most politicians, it's all filtered. They're telling you what you want to hear. They're never going to tell you. They're never going to be honest. And we know they're not going to be honest. And they tell us all these lies, like masks make you ill.
You really can't say that Trump does not lie. I mean,
no, but I think all of them lie.
Maybe all of them lie, but he actually makes lying something that's commendable about a person. That's why he's such a hideous character, right? He's like, he's made dishonesty a good thing. Like, it's like a quality that people like in him. You know, that's what his fans like about him, that he's so dishonest to get away with it. I mean, how can that person be a leader? I mean, that's like the worst quality that a leader should have is dishonesty. And at least, like, the others pretended like they were honest, you know?
I guess so. I feel like with all these things, it's so hard to, like, you know, this Scott Adams thing, we're all watching two different movies at the same time. You're like,
is Scott Adams the guy that defends Trump a bit?
He doesn't defend him, but he says that he's a genius. Like, he's like a crazy genius.
He's playing a crazy long game or whatever, right?
So a really good example of this is, you know, when George Bush said the French have no word for entrepreneur.
You know, right, yeah.
You know, so we all like think that George Bush is stupid, and we all like laugh about him, blah blah blah. But yet he, can I remember having this because I lived in, you know, I live in the UK. George Bush was the devil, and you know, he was like devil incarnate. And then I went to America, I think for the first time, and you suddenly saw George Bush on like TV channels, and he was just like talking, where you only ever got like really small chunks of him. And I was like, God, this guy is like really funny. Like, he was a really funny character, and he was like charming and all this kind of stuff, and people really really liked him. And you're like, what do you mean, like, Americans are crazy, how can they like this guy? And yet he got voted in twice. And when he got voted in the second time, it's like, I don't understand it, like, how can they vote this guy in? He's the devil. But you know, and
he doesn't look like the devil anymore, I don't think.
Exactly.
Comparison to Trump. He actually just looks like a normal president.
It's the same if you go back to look at Nixon. Like, you know, Nixon did amazing things, like, you know, to do with peace with China and the biggest ever disarmament treaty and environmental treaty and loads of stuff to do with poverty. But we just see him as this, like, this devil from the 1970s. And now I think with the way everything's filtered is, I think it affects our sense making in a way. Like, I think at the moment it's like this General Flynn thing. You know, we had 3 years of Russian collusion, which turned out to be completely false, and it's completely destroyed the democratic system, and it's just destroying politics and journalism and everything else. And that's like the biggest story of our age. The fact this thing didn't happen and it was all made up, but no one talks about it. And it's just about, like, Trump is misspelling things. But these, like, fundamental things about democracy that are nothing to do with supporting Donald Trump. So I think part of maybe how a mental health issues are partly to do with the psychosis caused by that we, you know, like, we get told that Donald Trump is a Russian KGB agent for 3 years. Like, every single time we put on the television, everything we read, everything we... And then it just disappears. Like, oh, it wasn't. It was a mistake. And like, I was saying.
Things don't get followed up, do they? There's no follow up.
Well, because it's all an illusion. It's all fiction. It's designed. It's kind of making people mentally ill. But I think that's the thing that I find most disturbing, how really smart people who are way more smarter than me are kind of invest in things that are obviously not going to, it's a kind of a cult, I guess. Is you really want these things to be true because you've invested 3 years in your life into something.
Do you not also just think that it's a little bit about conformity, and you conform to the ideas of your tribe or group? So
you want to conform
because you want to be seen as a good person, right? Like, that's how I kind of think about it a lot of times. So it's like, it's virtue signaling, right? Like, what you believe and what you say about certain things in politics is to do with how you want to be seen as a person rather than what you actually think is true.
Yeah. But it also makes you uncomfortable, and it makes everybody else uncomfortable to have, like, even now talking about this Donald Trump thing, it makes me feel uncomfortable talking about it, because I know that people will listen to it and they'll think, oh, he just likes Donald Trump, which isn't the case. Like, no one could like Donald Trump, but they can.
But like, from my perspective, like, if I just don't think that you feel uncomfortable about anything, because you say all sorts of things that are like really controversial.
No, but it makes.
I just assume that you don't care what people think.
No, like this morning, because I said that tweet, and then I was reading some of the comments, and I felt like, because people were actually took them quite seriously, I had to reply to some of them.
Is that Vanessa, the same tweet that was on Instagram?
I think it was
well.
On, yeah, and it was on, I replied a few people on Facebook. But the thing is, you're in the middle of writing a book, you haven't got time to really go through all these things. So Vanessa this morning was like, what, you're not yourself today, what's wrong with you? Are you stressed about something? I'm like, no. But it was like just going in to look at those tweets, because you're always trying to make yourself, like, I spend my whole life trying to help people in a way, like writing books and whatever. Like, I don't intend to make things worse for anybody. So, but I have this desire, like, you know, I spent 2 years writing this stupid book about abseiling, because I don't want people to die abseiling. And I'll send you.
Who died recently? Oh, Brad Gilfry. Yeah. Then didn't you do something that was a bit too soon? Maybe you said something
probably
about
the same day, probably.
Yeah, but I mean. Surely it's just easy to not do stuff like that.
Never, but I think this kind of, you know, like, oh, this guy, he was a, like, you know, when Ajax is killed by Achilles, you know, outside the walls of Troy, you know, because he trips over his stupid sandals or something, you know, that's the day you want to say it. Right then, everybody, so make sure your sandals are done up properly, you know, like.
Right, so your thinking is, everyone's hurting over this, so this is going to have maximum impact now.
Like, if some, yeah, if, you know, if
is
if,
it though, or are people too busy being sad to be thinking about?
No, they're not sad, really. They're not. I don't think people are sad. Like, you wouldn't go to his mum and say, "Oh yeah, he shouldn't have been." Like, basically, he.
But his mum might read that. That's the point.
But she would agree with me. She would agree. It was
yeah, but
a
fucking
she's
not
idiot.
Gonna be talking about abseiling to Brad's mates, is she, on that day? No,
if 100 people came up to Brad's mum and said, "Oh, he was really unlucky, you know, these things happened, he died doing what he loved," and then one person said he was an idiot, you know, he just made two mistakes and he killed himself. And what's most important is other people don't make the same mistakes, she would be more inclined to think that was a good conversation rather than this kind of eulogizing. I'll just cut and paste the poem into this forum, you know, it's better to live one day as a tiger, blah blah blah, you know, like all these things, like you live long enough, you see this thing, these things happen 100 times, you know. I've just it's not how you, but maybe it is wrong, but that I haven't got that filter though, I guess, to stop.
Right, is that it? And then what happens, like, so you say something because it's what you think, but then you see that it might hurt people's feelings, and then you're like, oh shit, or you're not like, oh shit.
I guess you have the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like when Mr. Jekyll, whichever one it is, you know, when you go back to normal, you're like, oh god, what.
But when you say you go back to normal, you mean just stop talking to whoever it is you've offended.
Yeah, you just go like, oh, why do you do this? Because I think you really care. I think I really care about it. Like, I don't really care about Brad, but I do really care about some climber who might die because they've seen Brad or you know, Alex Honnold doing tandem abseiling or similar abseiling. Like, for me,
wait, why do you not care about Brad, but you care about the other person?
Well, because Brad's dead, it doesn't matter about Brad. Like, I'd care about Brad's mum, and you know, like, I've met Brad loads of times. But I don't really, he's dead, like, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, right, yeah. But I mean, like, you could say, I thought you sort of meant, like, you don't care. Because obviously, like, the way I would look at it is that it didn't have to happen, right? Obviously, yeah. It has, but. But Brad was pretty sketchy.
Yeah.
He's a sketchy guy. And I know a lot of young men who are like him, who are sketchy guys. And
that's because they hang around.
Scary.
That's because they look up to sketchy guys, probably.
Like you.
I'm very safe. But yeah, but maybe you think I'm sketchy. I probably am a bit sketchy.
Yeah, people definitely think you're sketchy.
Yeah.
You know, if they read your book and read the you on doing these aid things, I think that's sketchy, wouldn't they?
That's why I did think about going up Denali and not teaching Vanessa how to do a crevasse rescue. That's one thing. I often late night thinking about things like.
Why would you do that?
I think we shouldn't have
why
time.
Why wouldn't you teach that? Oh, so you already did this.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Okay, right, yeah.
But
I mean, I've done loads of things like that though, because you know, like I guess like climbers. Maybe more these days, like they do have a proper apprenticeship, right, where they go on courses and stuff, but
some do.
I don't go on courses. I never went, like the first time I went alpine climbing, I just wore trainers with plastic bags in between the socks and the trainers. You know, and but yeah, people, yeah, probably still people. It's hard to know, isn't it, like what's, I mean, I think you could relate this a bit to the coronavirus situation now, isn't it? It's like, to some extent, like modern humans are just so hell bent on minimizing risk at all costs, aren't we? It's like people die. Like we seem to be okay with some risk, like going, like if, for example, say we had like never had cars up until this point, everything else was the same, but we didn't ever have cars. And then someone just like made the car and then built motorways. And we did a risk assessment, and then someone said, like, this is how many people are going to die on the motorways every year. We'd be like protesting against motorways.
Yeah.
We'd be like, this is terrible. Like, what you want, you getting from A to B faster than this time is more important than this many lives. And because that's what we're doing now with the coronavirus to some extent, aren't we? It's like we're weighing up certain things against lives as if we've never done it before, but of course we've done it loads of times before. We do it all the time.
Is that something that climbers do more better than other people, like they like
you think so
more.
But then you read some of the forums with climbers and you're like, oh, maybe not.
I feel like you've done enough climbing where the outcome could end up with you dying when you're doing it. Or worse, yeah, you've done like some hard routes, and you spend your life thinking about risk and appraising risk, and most people don't do that. They're always trying to minimize it to a point where it's not possible.
Yeah, but I also think that people don't even know that they're subconsciously making risk decisions, or that they are taking risks every day, but they just don't know it. Like you know, when you get in a car and you go on the motorway, there's a certain probability that you'll be in an accident on the motorway, right? And it's not that small a chance. So like, it's just that people don't think about that because it's been normalized.
Yeah. Do you know this thing that like we used to have sex, like everyone used to live in the same room, you know, everyone would live in that one room in the past. Yeah. So people like sex was like very, very normal. Like the stories, you know, people would be having, you go to the pub and people would be having sex like against the table. You know, like this was like 300 years ago. So, you know, people would just like defecate everywhere and there was no privacy whatsoever. So you'd have like five generations in one room and people would be having sex. But then when people started separating rooms in house into rooms, people started having privacy, you know, so sex became like something which was hidden. So that's where pornography came from, because it went from being like a normal thing to being something that was secret. And the same could be said for like death, because, you know, like our grandparents probably saw dead people. They saw dead animals. They saw animals which were, they would get, who's ever killed their own stuff to eat? You know, if someone died, you would sit, they would be laid out, you'd see a dead body. Mm. But now no one sees any, you know, your grandma goes to the old people's home and then you never see her again. She's, next time you see her, she's like in the, you know, being cremated or something. So we've become like a really obsessed with death. Like media is full of death, full of killing, full of guns. Games are all about killing things. And so maybe this virus is a little bit to do with that, about not really even understanding how many people die every day. It's like an amazing number.
We're very like sheltered from it, aren't we?
We just think people live forever, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say something, I've forgotten now.
It's like I shared something the other day, and it was something I saw somewhere. It was all these figures of how many people have died and since January. And it was something like, the main reason I shared it was it said to be like 16 million abortions or something. And it was the abortion number, or 11 million. It was like a really high number since January. But it had like numbers for people who died of starvation and blah, 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 all these kind of figures. And it was like really amazing amount of people die, like, you know, die every month or every day. And I think we just have this disconnect, you know, from life and death, really. But also from life, like, people aren't really having babies either. You know, the number of people having babies is massively down. So it's almost like everyone is trying to keep stay alive as long as possible and not allow any other new life to come in a way, where in the past,
hopefully we can merge with the robots.
Yeah.
But we can live forever. I don't know.
Ready to be.
I think like legality, the sort of like lawsuit culture is probably a part of it as well, isn't it? Because we've made people culpable, haven't we, for deaths? And
yeah.
So that's probably part of it too, because everyone's terrified of being sued. And
we have very high expectations as well, I think. We're all sold. Like in the UK, you're spending about 50% of your income on various taxes and everything else. And in return for that, you get this control. Everything should be controlled. Education, health, everything on your behalf. And I think it's a bit like buying insurance. It's only when your house burns down that you realize it doesn't work, you know, or it's very difficult to make it work. The same with policing. The idea of the police being there, responding and protecting you, is okay until you need them to respond and protect you. Then there's no one there. So I think maybe now this
Yeah, but then on the other hand, though, it's like we do have social, what's the word? The opposite of chaos.
Safety net.
No, just things work, right? Like we don't have chaos. We don't have
like structure. But isn't it?
Dropping the word. But like, you know, one of the biggest fears out of this coronavirus was that we'd lose that social structure, that social conformity, and we would get, yeah, that's it, social cohesion. That's what I'm looking for. And you know that, because you just imagine it, right? Like, say for example, like things got so bad, right? Say that this virus, it wasn't the virus that it is, and it's like a flesh eating bacteria that like destroys your first day. Like, you know, we've all seen, like, I think like week one of the lockdown, we watched 21 days later.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine a prequel to 28 days later.
Oh right, yeah, that's it. 28 days later. You know, imagine just like if like the electricity goes or like internet goes and you've got no way of knowing what's going on at other parts of the country and all the supply chains end. And it is fragile, actually, society. And even though you say like, oh, until you want police to come and sort something out for you. Yeah, I get your point. But at the same time, it's like we don't actually have to kill each other to last piece of bread either, right? Like things are working quite well, and that's because of this like shared belief that if you do something wrong, you know, the police are there to punish you, or that you will be protected. And then there's this thing that called money, and we all believe in that, and it does work quite well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, you go to Somalia and see the opposite.
Well, yeah.
But yeah. I think a lot of it's just, I think a lot of the things, they work as long as no one uses them. Like, I think maybe that's a problem with a lot of, you know, you create this, we're kind of going back to this, well, not selfishness, but like,
I think we talked about that for 2 seconds, didn't we?
Well, you have like you have a finite resource to help people who are disabled or unemployed or ill. But if everyone starts availing of it and everyone feels like they're disabled, and, you know, I think there was one point where it was it was like, you know, 20% of the UK workforce was on disability benefit or something. It was some crazy figure. And because so many people like use the system like that way, it meant they had this terrible reversal where everyone was being appraised, people who were genuinely disabled. And, you know, I guess we're going off the topic here, but these kind of systems, I think, are kind of illusionary. They're not meant to be used. They're meant to feel safe, like having a rope. Like, how many times, you know, you don't want to be falling off the whole time. You know, if you're on a big trad route, it's just there in case you fall off. But if everyone spends their whole life just falling off, they'll never get anywhere.
That's my job, is to get people to fall off. Yeah. that's my main job.
I guess it's good to know it's there.
You have to know that it's there to trust it.
Yeah. It's funny,
the social safety net. I don't know. I think I probably do trust it. I think I probably do think that if everything went tits up, then I would probably be looked after. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't want to test it, but that is what I think. And that is a nice thought. And I think that that's probably, it's better in our country than it is in most other countries for that. Like, even in the States, right, not having healthcare is such a, there's no net there, is there? It's like, if you mess yourself up, then you're in debt for the rest of your life or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's often
seems like it's the people in the middle who suffer. Like, if you're really, really poor, the system's in place to help you. And if you're really rich, you don't need any help. It's often the people right in the middle, you know, who can't get free healthcare, but they can't afford healthcare. There's a weird, I think that gap is like getting bigger and bigger. I think like in Ireland, you pay, in Germany, I think you pay maybe, is it 2,000 euros or 4,000 euros a year healthcare, but it's like private system. And in Ireland, it's similar. So you pay like, you know, like 150 euros every month for your healthcare. But if you haven't got any money, then you get really good healthcare in Ireland because it's free.
Do you get the same as someone paying 150 euros a month?
Yeah, so it's...
I actually kind of like that system. I actually want to pay more and get better healthcare. Yeah. I would actually like that. Like, obviously, people at the bottom shouldn't pay for it because they can't, right? But, like, I'm in the position where I would actually rather pay, like, 100... 200 quid a month or something, and be able to just like go and get my bloods checked or something, you know. Like, I've never used the NHS, and every time I do, it's a terrible experience. I'm gonna get hate for this, but like, I'm a fan of the NHS. I think it's great that we all have healthcare and stuff, but I actually think I'd rather pay more and get just a bit of a better service. I think maybe because just being an athlete in training, like, you don't just want to not have diabetes, right? It's like our standard of health is so low. I actually want to be like at the top health. I don't want to just like not be dying.
have you noticed that when you go to like in Africa and places, everyone is so fit? They're like amazingly fit, like they're super...
I don't know if you could say that about all of Africa. I think there's definitely a lot of health problems,
but like the majority of Africa, more like a lot compared to the West. You know, most Africans have a lot less than we do, but their standard of living, if you don't look at just what they're living in, it seems a lot higher. They seem to be a lot, you know, I don't know if you watch this like Walking with Elephants program that's on at the moment. It's like one of these, some guy walking with elephants. But it's quite good because you actually see, you know, what Africans really live like. They're not all like living, you know, like big pot bellies and stuff. You know, most Africans have like they have enough money and they can eat and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, everyone is like so fit and, so, you know, kind of cheery, and, you know, they're not like telling you their problems and trying to commit suicide. I don't know, but a friend of mine, she's from Ghana. And I was saying to her, like, oh, what's the mental health like in Ghana? And she just like burst out laughing. And she was just like, she just couldn't even think, you know, like, you know, but it's...
Yeah.
But it's almost like the more you have, the worse it becomes in a way. Like it's like the trap, I guess it is.
Well, yeah. I think it's an inverse U, isn't it? It's like, you know, you your quality of life and your well-being increases with your the amount of money you make to a point, and then it starts decreasing.
Yeah, I think it's like 24,000 euros apparently. That's optimal. the optimal amount of money to make. Yeah. And after that, like, if you can get a job, you know, if you can have like a millionaire's lifestyle on very little money, you know, because a millionaire, what they want is time. So if you can work one day a week and you can organize your life so you have very little outgoings, don't spend any money, you can have all this free time to do what you want to do. But rather than working, like, rather than a couple both working every day, you know, never seeing each other, never seeing their kids, and just getting, and also being in loads of debt and buying loads of stuff they don't want and don't need. It's
a trap, isn't it?
But I think most people are in it, really. I call it like locked in life syndrome, where you can't really get out of it. You know, you can see what a mess everything is, but you can't get out of it, and nobody else, you're kind of locked in there. But I've got this, you know, I've got my membership of the gym, you know, I can't, you know, I've got my personal trainer, I can't cancel it. And I've got, you know, we booked this holiday for next year. We have to keep paying for it. And we've got our car and blah, blah, blah.
You know, so yeah, like I remember like the first like 8 years of me being an adult or something. Up from like 18 to 25 or something. I just didn't have any outgoings.
Yeah.
Just none. I think my phone bill, maybe. Yeah, phone bill and contact lenses, and that was it. You know, like I bought a car and then I bought a van, so there's that sort of thing, but that's it. And now I've got a house, it's a lot different, and it's just easy to pick up outgoings, isn't it? Like Netflix account, Spotify account, this thing for your computer, Zoom account, you know, it's like...
Yeah, yeah. All just like a death by a thousand... By 1,000 direct debits.
Yeah.
They went to this Samburu, this tribe in northern Kenya, and we went to hang out with them to teach them how to go rock climbing. And it's funny, like, it's like they just build their own house, as in they just get a load of mud and a load of water, they just build their house. And if it falls down, it's like, oh, these houses aren't very good. It's like, well, I'll just build another one. It doesn't cost me anything. But they're so happy. And these, when you see like a Samburu, like a kid walk across a road with his goats or whatever, and he's, you know, it's like a 7-year-old with like an AK-47, they'll walk across the road and they just hold themselves with the most amazing self-pride and self-worth. Mm-hmm. And then you come back to the UK and you'll see like a kid who just looks like he's probably a goth, probably, but they just look like they're worthless, you know, the way their body language and everything else.
Probably a goth, probably an emo.
But it's
what is that then? Like, how can we get over that? Like, what do we do? Does that mean that if we go into a recession, it might do us all good? Is that what you're saying?
Like you meet a lot of people who get made redundant. You think it's the worst thing that's ever happened to them, and it's the best thing that ever happened to them. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but then there's all the people you don't meet who just, you know, are still sitting in mining towns waiting for the coal to come.
I do like people that are honest about that, though. Like, you know, like some people have accidents, don't they? And like they end up paralyzed or lose a leg or something. And it, you know, for some people, it does end up becoming the best thing that ever happened to them. And there's that thing called post-traumatic growth instead of stress. But then it is like... So for some people, it's just shit. You know, nothing actually good comes out of it. It's just this really shit thing that they have to endure. And you can get as much as you want out of it, you know, try to get as much positivity and learning as you can from it. But it is just shit still.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like...
Maybe you get like this kind of paralysis. You know, they get like data paralysis. You know, what's the thing if you're an extreme optimist and an extreme pessimist, you just end up being like stuck, because you can see the most amazing thing. I'm actually going to just leave Doncaster. I'm going to go on to live in London. I'm going to become like a star of, you know, starring on the West End or something. And at the same time, you're thinking, oh, but I'm worthless. I'm just rubbish, everything. And da, 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 da. You know, so I don't know. It's you can very easily end up in this state where you're just in paralysis. You can't just commit suicide or just commit to your shit life, but also you can't commit to like, I just need to get out of here. I need to go and try and get a visa and go and live in Canada and fuck my parents and all the people I know. I've just got to escape from here. You know, that's what people did in the past. You know, people, you know, they were forced to have, you know, the old Tory thing about I got on a bike, you know,
yeah,
I got on a bike and I looked for work.
And, right.
You know, that
pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Like have you ever read Hillbilly Elegy?
No.
Like it's a really great book, but you know, this kid, you know, grandma, you know, he was just, you know, really as bad a start as you can get in life. And he is like, he has this tale, which is really the tale of the American dream, but the American dream is the same dream in every country. It's just been rebranded the American one.
Mm.
But it's that ability to just keep on to try and escape. You're in this like centrifugal force of your poverty or whatever, or your birth or your class, but somehow you have to try and break through. But it's the people around you will hold you there. That's the problem. Mm. It's not like rich people holding you back. It's sort of like,
you know, you grow up in a small town, right, in England, and there's, or wherever, and there's people that stay in the small town, and then there's people that leave. It's sort of like that, isn't it? Like, people just get stuck, and everyone who's a kid, especially if it's a bit of a shit town, like Warrington was where I was a teenager, right, and it's a bit of a shit town. It's probably not shit as Bolton. That's where you grew up, isn't it? Yes. But almost. No. It's probably quite shit. And, like, there's people that left and people who didn't leave. But the people who didn't leave, they're still talking about leaving.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if they just said, like, oh, it's all right here, actually, I don't mind it. And they're like, oh, my mates and my family, I'm going to stay. But it's like everyone wants to leave or talks about leaving, but they don't.
But when you go back, like, it's so nice. Everyone speaks the same accent, and you have all these memories of
I never
being
go
there.
Back.
You never go
I don't
back.
Know. I don't think I'd like it even really.
I find it kind of. Actually, I do find it depressing.
I don't have good memories actually. That from my childhood mostly. I'm like happy to be an adult, you know. Like some people sort of look back on school life or whatever, and they're like, "Oh, they were the best days." No, it's the best days when you're an adult and you've got your freedom.
Yeah. And I guess maybe because maybe just people are fixed once they get to 18. They're like fixed in place, you know, before they know it, they've got kids, they've got all this kind of, they've got a job and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Or
yeah.
You know, like once you're signing on, it's quite hard. Like at the worst case scenario, and once you've got your housing benefit and once you're signing on, all that kind of stuff, it's really hard to get out of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
But you can have like a really good life. Like I don't know what it was that made me not keep being on the dole. Like it doesn't really, there's no real reason why I didn't just still keep signing on. But you can have like
I think it's just like the challenge of like, because you know, I've often thought about this, right? Like, because in some ways, like I could just be a professional climber. I don't need to be a coach. But like, it's like I've created a job for myself when I don't necessarily need a job.
Yeah.
It's probably a good idea for lots of reasons, but then, yeah, I have thought of it. I don't know if you've ever asked yourself this question, but like, you know, if you just got loads of money given to you, like, what would you do? Because I think it's better for your mental health, isn't it, to have direction, to be like, yeah. I need to do this stuff to earn money.
Yeah, reason to exist.
Well, yeah, it's just like a project. It's a challenge. It's just like. I mean, I could just go climbing all the time, I think, but it's probably better to have a job as well.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably be less happy if someone gave me loads of money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think because I've been sponsored 3 times. I was making like enough money, like a living out of it, like 12 grand or whatever. And all 3 times I stopped. Like that was my decision to not want to be sponsored. And I think, and every time I did it, it was like a crazy thing to do because you're basically removing like most of your income, but it forced you to have to be dynamic and try and think of new ways of, you know, like.
Is that why you did it though?
I think, well, part of it is that feeling you're not good enough to be sponsored and they're just going to get rid of you.
And you know, they don't like the pressure of
a feeling you have to do something.
Yeah, performing and that kind of thing.
But as soon as you stop, funny. You always end up doing something really amazing. Like you're like, shit, I should have kept on doing it. But I think that I think people get soft, really. And I think that's kind of not, like, once you get soft, you're not able to adapt and be flexible. And, like this year, like, my house burnt down. You know, so I was living in Kuwait, got deported.
Did it actually burn down?
Yeah, our house burnt down.
Most people use that as a figure of speech, don't they?
No, we had some people living in it, and they were praying to God with some candles, and they set fire to the house. And the house
no way. So, yeah, why were you living in Kuwait again?
Just for the fun.
Really? Oh, why?
I don't know. It's just like the last place you'd ever want to live in the world. So it was interesting.
What did you do there? Is that a bit of a concrete? It's just like a bit of concrete in the desert kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shithole.
Why did you do that? That's so weird.
Well, I wanted to move to a man.
Over there.
I wanted to move to a man.
Okay, right.
So it's like
the man's better because it's good climbing.
Yeah, yeah. And the people are nicer.
Yeah, they are friendly in Oman, aren't they?
What was that thing
if you never... did you say a man or did you say Oman?
Oman.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I went to Saudi Arabia. That's you should go to Saudi Arabia. That's a nice place.
Yeah, no.
McDonald's in Saudi Arabia, they have like curtains and all the cubicles. Like it's like a changing rooms in a shop. So you can go in there, you can take your veil off. It's kind of weird. But I think to be flexible is, you know, this thing, I think Eric Weinstein says the things about if you're Jewish, you have this thing about eating unleavened bread. I think he was on Joe Rogan talking about it. Like the idea that you eat the unleavened bread once a year, because if you wait for the bread to rise, you could get killed. So you always...
Wait, why?
Because, you know, like, it's the person who... If you make the bread and you're waiting for it to rise, and then the Nazis come and kill you all. But if you're like, let's just eat the bread now and go.
Oh, right. Eat it now before something bad happens.
Yeah, like, always be ready to... Always have loads of jewellery so you can eat it and get out of the country. Or, you know, like, this...
Right, okay, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of always expecting something bad to happen.
Yeah.
It's a good way of being in a way. It's like being very optimistic, but also very pessimistic at the same time. Like,
what is it? Like, it hope for the best, prepare for the worst, or what?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's it? The optimistic Jews all died in concentration camps, and the optimistic Jews died in the concentration camps, and the pessimistic Jews ended up with their swimming pools in California.
Do you not think that once you were in the concentration camp, like those that really like clung to life and fought and hoped to get out were the ones that survived once you were in the camp?
I think optimistic people die more, apparently.
You think?
Yeah, because I know they said, like in Vietnam when they had the POW camps, they said that POWs who were like, we're going to be out by Christmas, we're going to be out by Easter, eventually their spirit was like destroyed by their optimism, where people were like, just keep your head down.
But that's not actually optimism though, is it? That's just lying to yourself.
Delusion.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think people misuse the word optimism a lot. It's like really like real kind of, I guess that's the difference between optimism maybe and positivity. So like positivity is like making the most of things no matter what happens. So it's going, oh, well, I don't know when we're going to be out, but, you know, I'm going to try my best to live, right? Yeah. That's like positivity, but optimism's like, yeah, we'll get out next week. You know, it's sort of like that's illusion, isn't it? And then you're just bound to get hurt. But if you're like the person that's just like, oh, yeah, I really want to live. I want to keep living because the world's so great. I'm just going to like, have you seen the film Unbroken?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the guy in the raft that died. Because he was just really negative, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
He did stupid things like eat the chocolate on day one, and he just already given up, hadn't he?
Was that thing that well's full of like radiators and drains? You just have to stay away from drains.
I get that.
The drains just drain your energy, and radiators radiate energy.
Oh right.
Okay. You know, some people you have them in your lives, and you're like, oh my god, like, you're just draining all my energy out of me, you know.
Right,
you're talking about this relationship that broke up like 10 years ago and you're still talking about it, like.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah,
it's hard to know what to do with people like that though, isn't it? What to do with people like that, because
cut them out.
Do you? But then it's mean, isn't it, in some ways? I don't know if I attract people like that in general because I don't know many people, but...
They kind of hang together, don't they, I guess, people like that?
Some of my friends attract people like that and then they get stuck and they don't know what to do. Because the thing is, you want to help people, don't you? You want to be compassionate and... but
I think
at the same time, you can only give so much, can't you, right?
It's, I think, like, not helping people might be better.
It could be better in the long run.
Yeah. Like my dad always, when you're telling me a big problem and he'd be like, good luck with that. That's all he'll say. You know, and in a way, after a while, you stop saying things to him because what's the point? If he's just going to say that and you say, I'll just have to work it out myself.
Yeah. I don't know, though, because I think this is a bit more of a woman thing, female thing, but it's good to just talk about your problems sometimes and you don't really want solutions or answers. You just want to, like, air them.
Yeah.
And then you actually can just move on after that. You're just like, all right, cool, yeah, I can get over it. But you kind of need to talk about it first.
Yeah, as long as, I think
you don't do that as much.
If you have a window, you can air them. We'll have this conversation once. Mm. And then we can have it a second time, but that's it. We can't talk about it again or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you need a buzzer whenever you repeat something. You're like,
and then he was a dick, and then he was still a
So I think sometimes, like, talking about these things is as close to being with that person or being in that situation that it's like the next best thing to it. Like, stalking someone is the next best thing to being with someone, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Like, I think human beings have really weird connections to things. Like, you know, like a child will, if a child can't, you know, be loved, it'll like misbehave, because just being, someone being angry at you is the next best thing to someone loving you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, because the worst thing would be to just be ignored.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the worst thing you could do. Yeah. To be not important, not even important enough to be, but I guess that's the way you have the naughty step and you have all these. I don't know if in society what you have. You just get banned from everything, from Twitter and Instagram, maybe. I don't know how it'd work.
Deplatformed.
Yeah. But I don't know if we've come to any conclusions about whether climbing selfish or not. But I would say it is interesting.
It's not selfish. Oh, yeah, but we already said it just depends, doesn't it, on your mindset and your attitude. And
yeah.
What do you think about people just, like, taking massive risks and because of their egos? Because they, I mean, do you think it's honourable to, like, walk into a mountain knowing that you might not come down? Do you think that's a great achievement, or do you think it's probably just because someone's got a big ego?
I don't know if the ego is, like, the right word. Maybe they've painted this, like, this canvas, and they're in the middle of it. And they can't escape. You know, if you Uli
Steck... That is someone's ego, right?
I guess it
we
is.
We paint a canvas of ourselves and then we have to look to it.
Is ego not like a massive driver? You know, it's like an engine of, like, people doing things. Like, you don't do it just for the good of your heart. You do it because you want to, like Napoleon or, you know, Gandhi or...
Yeah, but...
Mother Teresa. They also... Like,
all the wars in the world have been caused by men's egos, probably, right? Would we not be in a bit of a better world if just people would just had slightly smaller egos? Or
I don't know. I guess it's one. It's
maybe we wouldn't have gone to the moon, but we might have had fewer wars.
Well, I always have this debate. You know the old debate about women. You know, women shouldn't have the vote. It's like a really old-fashioned thing. In that, I think that women's views, a woman's view, 70% of women see the world very differently from 70% of men. The others can kind of agree on things. Where I think that maybe at the moment we're not making a fully feminized world, and we're not making a fully masculine world. If that makes any sense. Like, it's like no one is really happy.
Right.
Like, women are unhappy and men are unhappy.
I don't know if I agree with that, actually.
So someone said what you should have, that men should run countries and women should run, like, the local like schools. Councils. So they run the community and they look after everybody. And then men just stay out of that. They're not in, like, the government isn't allowed to interfere with how things run in the country. And they just deal with, like, planning railways and, you know, not getting into wars or whatever, or getting into wars.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you probably want men and women in, not 50-50 split, but you probably want some men and some women in all bits of society, right? Because...
Yeah. But not, as long as women aren't trying to be men and men aren't trying to be women, I think that's when things get more, you know, like if you create like a masculine world and then women are trying to play that game at the same time that men are trying to create a feminine world, you end up, no one really knows what that, it's probably a very yeah. difficult thing to get into, but.
I don't know if I buy into the idea that it's that black and white, that there's a feminine and masculine world, though, because I think that so many of those ideas have just, we've been, you know, like 50 years ago, you would say that you know, business or even teaching, right? 50 years ago, you'd say that teaching was a male job, right? Yeah. Is what men should do. And now it's
That's
like...
That's when it was good. That's when education was good.
But now, you know, if you say teacher, you probably think of a woman, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people might think that women make better teachers than men. I don't know. I don't know about that. But, you know, you certainly don't think that teaching is a male profession, right? So are all of our ideas about what a man's world looks like are probably just being... aren't potentially the most useful ideas for a best society.
So, well, someone said we get rid of these structures and ideas. We don't replace them with anything. We just leave a space, and we have no real idea how to fill it in. Ideas of what it is to be a mother or a father, or you know, we have an epidemic of people not knowing what the fuck they're doing at the moment. In a way, you know, if you look at on all the scales to do with crime and everything else, there is things are kind of breaking down, and maybe it's because we're removing all these structures and things.
Are things breaking down, or is like crime actually lower than it was 20 years ago?
So, I would argue that people don't report crime because they don't think it's worth it anymore. And crime is like, I would say so, but it's because again, you have the You have different kind of ideas whether the misreporting or unreporting of something means it doesn't happen. Like, would you feel safer walking through Manchester on a Saturday night than you would have 20 years ago? I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
Would you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's the thing, right? So, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, isn't it the case that we always think things are getting worse? It's some weird part of our psychology. Have you ever read any of Steven Pinker's?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's just like, actually, if you look... Oh, and there's that other guy as well that... it's Factfulness. Have you read that
book? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, actually, that it's because all our models are old and we've got a negativity bias, and we watch the news, which has got a negativity bias, and actually by almost every metric you can think of, it's getting better, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, poverty is down, like...
Globally,
poverty is down, and crime is down, and racism's down, and like everything's actually getting better.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I don't believe
it's
that, yeah.
That we might be... more, we've like our radar has become more sensitive,
yeah,
and we expect more.
Like, it's like the thing that people say that suicide is going down, but yet I've never in my life
that might be the only thing that's going up, actually. Suicide and depression, actually.
I'll definitely get like young girls are committing suicide in more numbers than they ever have before, and also young people. And there's a really good thing, there's like a lag, of, you know, we start seeing this. If we start seeing a problem now, you know, by the time we do anything about it, it'll be like a massive problem. So you could probably see like problems with mental health, like in the 80s coming along, but we didn't really, you know, social media, all these kind of things, but we don't really, we don't really take any notice of it because it's too big. Maybe it's that same thing about control, that we think the government's going to, we're paying the government to sort these things out, but it's kind of incapable of doing it. But by the time it's a problem, it's too, it can only react to the government. Where if you have your own kids, you're like, actually, I think like watching this, there's a program on the telly at the moment, it's this child in bed talking to his granddad on the iPad, you know, and that's kind of normalized. You know, like that is not normal, like leaving your child in bed talking to his granddad on an iPad. That's like, you know, but things become normalized. You don't know that how fucked up they are. You know, you can feel your mobile phone in your pocket and you don't own a mobile phone, but you have to try and, but you end up being a bit of a Luddite. Like the idea that everything is getting better and better and better, you know, like history goes up and down in waves. It's not like a continuation. So if you read, like this book about, trying to get through this book about Oliver Cromwell, it's like hard work, but there's, you know, we can see how things wax and wane. You know, Puritans are in control and then they leave and people go crazy and get those drink and do all sorts of stuff. And it's, I think maybe to be like a pessimistic, to take these things seriously, like mental health. How can you solve your own mental health problems rather than complaining that the government didn't do it? And why is someone saying you're selfish as a climber? You know, what are they doing? Like, why are they picking on you? And what are they doing? You know, this idea that having fun is a criminal offence. You know,
it's what it feels like in the lockdown, doesn't it?
Yeah, like you're not meant to.
It feels like
they've
banned fun as well as everything else. You can't if you're having fun in a pandemic, then you must be evil. Yeah. You must not care about the people who are dying.
You're like an antisocial. You're a wrecker or a saboteur.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think maybe the bottom line is people are just insane. Maybe that's the problem. Some people can cope with it better than others.
Well, also, I think we probably just forget that we are just still animals, aren't we? And we're not hardwired to live in this modern world with all this
stuff.
You know, it's like we're still sort of like got that fight or flight, and so like everything's primed for survival, isn't it? It's not primed to have a nice life. So
is that kind of, I guess there's that whole, like, I never read any Ayn Rand, but if you read, you know, you listen to her talking, you know, she talks a lot about selfishness and how, like, I don't know, you won't be at this stage yet, but if you ever have kids and you ever have these things where you have like different families and they all get together, like everyone does what they think everybody else wants to do and no one is ever happy. Where if you just say, I'm going bouldering or I'm going to go on my mountain bike, I'll see you back here at 5 o'clock. If everyone just did that, everyone would be happy. So it's if everyone's just doing what they think everybody else wants you to do to be a good person. So just go.
I'm a little bit of a, like, I'll just do my thing kind of person.
Yeah. No. I think you're a happier person for it. You're more able to give a full attention when it's needed, I think, instead of like splitting yourself between lots of things.
Yeah.
To be present.
I am, like, I don't know. I was listening to this thing the other day, that actually, because I'm someone that can kind of like procrastinate a lot and like have lots of things on at once, and like I'll be supposed to be doing one thing on one tab and it takes like a few seconds to load or something, and then I just switch tasks in that time, you know. Like, I think a lot of people like that, right? And but apparently it's not that bad a thing, but like most people that do anything creative or anything really cool, they've actually got lots of different projects on at once. And and that, like, procrastination isn't that big a problem, because like in those time that you're procrastinating, you actually sort of like ruminate on things, and you can, like, you're like problem solving, and there's like background work going on in your head, and then like that's when like cool ideas come out of that.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny, isn't it, when you read stuff and you just like, oh yeah, cool, that means I can, it sort of like validate something you're doing that you actually liked anyway. And then you
yeah, sitting watching, playing Xbox 24 hours a day for a year is actually quite good for you.
Yeah,
for your thumb coordination.
Keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking this afternoon. I hopefully haven't pulled you away from anything more interesting.
No, it's been fun.
I hope you haven't had any, I'll edit out any really terrible things when you were slagging off the NHS or yeah, when I was French kissing Donald Trump or something. I'll edit those bits out.
Yeah, the thing is I'm guessing that your fans that listen to you talk aren't that sensitive, so
hopefully not.
That's what I'm assuming.
they're very adult. They can take right, a bit of, yeah, of offence, maybe.
Yeah. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Cool, all right. Well, nice chatting to you.
Yeah. Take thanks, care. Hazel.
All right. Bye. Bye. Someday. Where's... I'm sorry.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.